This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, you're with Caroline and Ezra. This evening, we're going to be speaking about water.
Some Malaysians are living in places where water is hard to come by and every day is actually a struggle. Locally made documentary titled Tap That of Water, Land and Us explores a serious and major problem. And here to speak to us about it are the filmmakers, our guests this evening, Caroline Chon, as well as Beatrice Leong. Welcome, ladies. Good to have you here with us.
Hey guys.
Hi.
So tell us very quickly, is filmmaking or documentary, has that always been something of interest to you?
I've been in this for the last 4 or 5 years. It's been something that I've been doing. Most recently came out from doing a show with Lina Teo on the haze issue, so naturally it shifted to another environmental piece.
So you're just going based on what problems we have in the country, one by one?
Yeah, and that's quite a few.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it looks like you have a long career ahead of you. So 4 or 5 years of documentary filmmaking, does that make you a baby in the industry still?
Still very, very young.
Nice. But I'm the real baby here.
And how long have you been doing it for?
This is my first. Just a project, looking something to do with Beatrice when I met her, and I really wanted to do a documentary and try to look for a project that, you know, would mean something, and we found one thanks to BFM actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, because what happened was Carol actually came across this podcast by one of the interviews you guys did with Navin, who is one of our main characters, the guy who spurred it all. So, and she sent it to me and we were like, hey, let's get this guy out for coffee, and that's it. And we practically begged him to, like, you know, take us with you. Yeah.
And of course, this documentary is about water, specifically in Kampung Komborongo, is that right? Can you tell us a little bit more about the entire premise of the film?
Well, the film basically, okay, we went into Kampung Komborongo with Navin because he had been there previously and he highlighted the problems and he identified the problems in Kampung Komborongo. And so basically when we went there, we checked out this village. We met with quite a number of the villagers. And we got to see firsthand as to how they would actually need to walk to their water sources, and also how they actually don't have a decent source for water.
And I think one of the funniest thing, well, not funniest, but one of the thing with this village is that when we arrive, and even after what we've heard from Navin himself, there are actually pipes that are being laid down right into the village. They had this huge tank as well, and it's new. It's been maintained. It certainly doesn't look broken. Yeah. So, you know, but yet they rely on rainwater, which was
And the tank, it has been sitting there since 1997. It's still zero on empty.
Well, what exactly do you mean? I mean, is the problem that the tank is not full? It's well maintained. I don't understand. So is there water coming in? They just don't want to use it?
I think one of the issues is that the water is definitely not reaching these people. There's definitely water, but it is a naturally dry area. There's very little rainfall in that area as well.
Why is it not reaching the people?
Probably there's a disconnect between the authorities and the people that are actually laying down all these pipes. And of course, you know, being in Sabah and Sarawak, a lot of like the issues comes with who holds the rights to the land.
Right.
Yeah. And whether can you connect the water to there. Obviously, for the water to reach the village, you got to come from a dam. It's got to be piped down through different areas.
Right.
That was just not connected.
Now, wow. How common or unique of a problem is this in Sabah or Sarawak?
Is actually very.
When you say very, we're talking about the rural areas specifically?
No, in fact, Kampung Komborongo is actually only 15 minutes from Kudat town. Hmm. It's not that far. The terrain might be an issue, but that has never stopped.
Now, clearly, you know, if this particular issue, it's being quite common, I guess, perhaps in some parts of East Malaysia. What made you decide to focus on this particular story in this particular area?
I guess for us, it was because in some sense, it's like an easy in because Navin had already been there. We had help from a local NGO over there. So it was sort of kind of laid out for us that we know there's one village already identified, so we can easily go in. We have help. And we also managed to meet with local engineers that would, you know, be able to give solutions to all these water issues. So that's why we did pick this Kampung Komborongo.
We're speaking to Caroline Chan and Beatrice Long, who are filmmakers. Their new documentary, Tap That, of Water, Land and Us. We'll find out a little bit more shortly after this. This is the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, you're with Caroline and Ezra, and this evening we're talking with Caroline Chan and Beatrice Leong, filmmakers of a new documentary. It's called Tap That, of Water, Land and Us. I mean, we were speaking earlier before about, I guess, this whole idea of picking a documentary and then trying to find a subject matter. How did the whole idea come about? I mean, we've spoken about this character named Navin. You guys heard him on a podcast. How does he come into the whole story?
On a podcast here on BFM.
I know, no less.
Let's give ourselves some cheap publicity. All right, ladies.
Navin, well, how he's like the main drive of the film, I suppose. To a certain extent, he basically, you know, brings us in. He's the one that connects us and the villagers, and connects the villagers to the NGOs. And
but what's his interest to this whole story? Is it because he's involved with this
podcast,
particular movie?
Yeah, that podcast that we heard on BFM was actually like on Navin talking about his new projects, and he was just starting up a whole NGO where they provide water access, water pumps and toilets to villagers that are in need of it. And most of his projects has actually been run in around Sri Lanka, Laos, Cambodia. And at that point where we met him, he was actually looking for somewhere like, what can I do in Malaysia? You know, like, I've been running all over the world, but, you know, where do I start back home?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I think a couple of people has mentioned to him, like, you know, Sabah has this, there's a couple of places in need in Sabah, and you know, so they set him up with an NGO. So when he went off on his first trip to have a look and a survey, and then he came back and he told us all about it. And me, I'm actually half Sarawakian, so obviously that's this Borneo pride in me that I'm just gonna go home and find out what's going on, you know? Yeah, so that's that, and that's how, you know, Navin brought us there. So in another sense, I guess Navin was our spark. He started it off for us. He opened up something for us to look into, for me and Carol to work together. Yeah, so, and that's that. And
all right, let's continue into the storyline a little bit, or rather tell us about this Kampung Komborongo. So tell us a little bit about it. I mean, tell us about the demographics of the village, the history. Could you describe their living conditions for us, please?
I would say their living conditions it's not too bad, but it could be better. There are different parts of the villages where some you see it's really basic. There are some who are, I guess, slightly better off, where they have a decent, they have TVs and they have basic decent amenities. But I think one of the few that we met and went into that we were really affected by was this one particular family. They were living in a wooden house, which is, I mean, it's fairly common in some rural villages that we do have, you know, very basic wooden house, but, and it's so small. I think it's maybe about 15 or 20 square feet, or square meters. And it's a village, it's a household of women. So there's a grandmother, her daughter, and a couple of kids. And you see that they have barely anything there. And they had to walk to the river, which is almost dried up, to bathe and shower and do their dishes. And so there's it varies a little bit in the village itself.
I mean, what's the feeling? I mean, you go into a household like that, you meet these women who have to struggle like that every day, but how do they feel about it? I mean, yeah, I'm not asking whether or not they're happy or overjoyed, but is this something that they're sort of resigned to? And
I think they've accepted it in some sense.
I guess, as any most village that you find in Malaysia, they're actually very self-sufficient. So, you know, you plant something at the back of your kampung house, and there's a river there where you get your water. Or, you know, you go to town once a week to get rice and things like that. So everything is in balance. And what exactly happened when we went and looked at this village was, over the years, a lot of the places has been switched to agricultural land, obviously. palm oil, rubber plantations, orchards and things like that happen. And Kudat is actually known for their coconut trees. It's a major thing there. So as this thing comes into the village, obviously the man will leave. So they are no longer planting stuff to keep the family alive. They're off to town, or they're working on plantations. So you find a lot of these women-centric households that has to, like, you know, start doing things that the men used to do. And that's exactly what Carol has just mentioned, where, you know, this family, it's all women.
And how do they feel about it? I mean, is it frustration? Is it anger? Is it acceptance? What do you get from that?
I guess that's some sort of like acceptance of what can you do?
Yeah, I don't think there's anger. It appeared that it's not like they didn't appear to be unhappy, but obviously it looks like they've been living in that condition for a very long time, and you know, you kind of accept it to a certain extent.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking of the tempers that have flared here in the Klang Valley with a water shortage. I mean, in my own household, you know, I've got my father screaming it down because there's no water for two, three days of the tap that's right next to him.
That's right. Mm. It's just a completely different spectrum from how things are.
Yeah.
In preparation for this documentary, what were you prepared for, and what surprised you when you actually got there?
Oh, well, I think for me personally, it was just when we first went there, to me it was like, okay, we're just going to investigate, to learn more, to study more. And then when we found out, oh, this really the whole basis of all these problems is really because of land to a certain extent. And it's really, I don't know, it was quite disheartening seeing how they could have gotten help. They've asked for help for many years and help came, but like you mentioned earlier, you get your tanks and brand new pipes, but there's no water. So what is the point if you're going to bring in all this and paste up stickers on your...
So in trying to do something about it, obviously it resonated with the both of you. In trying to do something about it, do you hope that this project will then, you know, actually, I suppose, bring some sort of change for the people in the village? Is that sort of the overarching theme? Is that what you're hoping for?
I guess it's some sort of like a story needs to be told that you know, you often hear, oh, they don't have water because it's kampong lah, you know, it's rural, it's Sabah, Sarawak, they live on trees anyway. So you wouldn't expect them to need water for a lot of these things. And then, but I guess with the both of us, we have our skills. We make films to say something. And this was something worthwhile to be to tell everyone about, and it's something that needs to be told. Sometimes you cannot assume that just because it's like that, and you know, you don't know what's underneath it. As Carol said, we went in and thought that, you know, maybe it's a dry area, I'm just gonna get some pumps in it and all of that. But as you go in, you realize that the issues are not just that. It's a multi-layered issues. It's about losing their land. It's about, you know, rivers being polluted, that they no longer get water. And, you know, the men are not in the village anymore. So this woman has to take all over these chores. And
many layers too. Very, very difficult.
So it's not just about no water. That's why at the end of the day, when, you know, when we talk about this thing, it's really not just water. It's about our land and it's us.
Absolutely. We're speaking to Carolyn Chon and Beatrice Leong, who are filmmakers. Their new documentary is Tap That, of Water, Land and Us. We'll find out a little bit more after this. This is the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good evening, I'm Ezra Zayed.
Good evening, I'm Caroline Oh.
And we're speaking to Carolyn Chon and Beatrice Leong, filmmakers of the new documentary Tap That, of Water, Land and Us. We've been speaking a lot about the theme and subject matter of the documentary, but I guess putting together a documentary is easier said than done. How did the whole process come about when it comes to funding and getting the word out that, you know, this documentary was about to, you know, enter people's screens and festivals?
We're pretty punk about it. So when we decided that we wanted to do, so the first thing was like,
where are we going to get money from?
Where are we going to get money? That's the most important. So
We crowdsourced.
We put ourselves up on a crowdfunding site, Indiegogo. It worked really well in our favor. And then we also had a
crowdfunding night where we got a few local artists to perform, to donate their time. And then we invited as many people as we could.
And generous friends.
Yeah.
And
so what did you need? I mean, you needed funding, clearly, but did you need manpower and friends who had particular skills in film production as well?
Well, I think us being in production, so we pretty much had friends who, like, you know, who are able to sort it out with something. We had friends who, like, loan us their gears on top of what we've already had. And then we needed help in obviously getting there, the money that we spent in the village, transportation, flights there, and accommodation there. We were there for like about 6 days, and which is a funny thing, because what I did was like I went on to Facebook and posted like, so do you think Tune Hotel might like to put us up in Sabah? And I didn't know that I had a friend in my Facebook list that actually worked in Tune Hotel, and like, yeah, okay, we'll give it to you. And that's just that. So it's been great getting people to help us, people who just jump in. And
well, yeah. What exactly do you need funding for? I mean, so I understand in kind and things like that, so you need accommodation and friends with skills and camera equipment, but so in this sort of, would you consider this an indie documentary sort?
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, what exactly, where exactly would the funding go?
A lot of funding went towards it went a lot to transportation. We didn't it wasn't an ambitious budget at all. Most of it went to
logistics
of it. Paying, getting to the village. Obviously, we needed to, like, you know, yeah, in return of something to the village as well.
And a bit in post-production as well.
Yeah, getting color grading and things like that. Right. Audio played a big part. Although we had friend who came on and, you know, did music for us, gave us a song and all of that, but everything done there, we got to pay for studio hours and things like that.
Tap That, the documentary was featured during the Doc Week Festival held in Adelaide, Australia. How did it end up there?
So I'm a member of MyDocs, which is Malaysia Documentary Association here. They've just recently started and be very active in getting like newer filmmakers out there. So one day Harun, who runs MyDocs, called me and asked like, hi, do you want to go to Australia? Send me something. I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? And I hadn't even started editing yet. And the footages were just sitting in a hard drive. And I was like, yeah, sure, it's almost done, no worries. And just like that, we were in the program and everything just snowballed. And then we started editing in mind to like, we got to hit Doc Week, we got to hit Doc Week. And both me and Carolyn were literally editing all the way till we get on the plane.
And oh my goodness.
And so cutting it a bit close in terms of timing, but what were you promising to the festival organizers? Were you promising, I guess, the full length feature, or were you promising some parts of it?
No. Well, before that, they've already asked us, like, what are you going to screen? So we've already gave them a brief lowdown, and we've told them that we've got like a 25 minute cut. And in the end, we gave them like something that was closer to 35 minutes. It's definitely a short form documentary. It's been interesting because one of the reasons why we screened at Doc Week was we was part of this program called the Asia Pacific New Documentary Program, which is a new initiative by Doc Week in Australia to bring filmmakers from around this region. So we had other documentary submissions from India, Cambodia.
Yeah, those film made in
New Zealand. So there were a lot of great documentaries. So it was nice seeing, like, you know, we're part of that. And this is the first year doing this.
Did you find that the standard for documentary filmmaking and the support was more or less the same across the board? I mean, since we're talking about countries in the region, let's not go to New Zealand.
Definitely not. I think our industry here is really young. There's a lot more that we need to learn. It's a total different ballgame together in terms of like the fundings that you get, the support that you get, and the standard that you want to achieve. But with this kind of programs, like with how MyDocs are like sending people out and, you know, hustling you to like finish something so that you get it shown. So it's been great. So at least now we come back and we know, like, you know what, we got to shoot more lah.
Absolutely. You got to start somewhere. What was the response like? Did you find that the viewers were interested in it?
Yes, very much so. In fact, I think we made quite a good impact on some of them. They came up to us. One in particular was a Sabahan Australian boy who grew up in Sabah but lived in Australia. And his dad works in Sabah, and he did a water survey in Sabah to survey around. And it's just, I think, by chance that, you know, who would have thought that we'd fly all the way to Australia to meet and get a new connection to go back into Sabah and have better connections to shoot the next part of the film.
Yeah, one of the challenges we faced in filming it was we didn't get much support from getting a voice from the authorities and the other side of the story. So it was pretty cool that suddenly this guy, this Australian-looking guy, came up to us after the film and like, "Hi, I'm from Sabah," and we were like, "What? You definitely don't look Sabahan." So yeah, that was definitely good.
And I guess the point of these type of festivals is, I guess, to network and perhaps gain more connections, definitely, be it through providing more content for your film, or perhaps connecting you to people who might be able to provide more funding towards it as well.
Yeah, you just don't know who you meet. So it's we did meet another person that to me was very, very important. I think one of the reasons why we make films is you want someone to listen to your story. So this one of this guy in the audience, he was actually a philanthropist. So he supplies solar panels and pipes to Papua New Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
So he sort of like, he's a funder. He provides infrastructures there, and he came up and he told me how, like, you know what, a lot of his projects there failed. It wasn't sustainable. After 6 months, they just go away. And then he came up and he told me, like, something that your character said changed my mind about the way how I'm going to help. And that really felt me, and I was taken aback, like, what? So, you know, it literally changed the way he did something. And then after that, he went like, you know, "I'm interested to help Sabah." And so there's an ongoing conversation there, and that was really fulfilling.
Yeah, I guess that's the whole point of making the film anyway. Yeah.
So what's next for the documentary? I understand there's going to be a screening of sorts in Sabah sometime in June at the KK International Film Fest. Is there something that's going to happen close to here in Peninsula?
We are definitely sending out DVDs to our funders, our first round of funders. We will continue shooting to see where we can go and what we can do. We've got a website in plan, where, you know, we're going to get stuff in, like people can tell their stories or people can give us more money to shoot.
And where would people go to send more money to support this documentary?
At the moment, we are on Facebook. That will be fb.com/tapthat.afilm. So that's where you can find us for now, and then we are definitely rolling out.
Terrific stuff. And once again, that address is fb.com/tapthat.afilm. You can send more money if you want to support this new documentary that is still ongoing. We've been speaking to Caroline Chon and Beatrice Long, filmmakers of Tap That, of Water, Land and Us. Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you. Good luck.
This is the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.